오브디아나스미란 테스야. 디아나 문제는 샤나카야. 착출 미니탐 유네 테스만 시그르베니마하.
Actually, this purport encapsulates everything I was talking about yesterday. Maybe I should have read the purport and spoken about what I spoke about yesterday today. Just one other point that's in here that I touched on yesterday but didn't express as clearly as Prabhupada is stating here. That for the common man, both modern science and Vedic wisdom are simply to be accepted because none of the statements either of modern science or of Vedic literature can be verified by him. Just like we may say that, well, there are subatomic particles. People say, well, we believe in that because it's scientific, but we don't believe in the Atma because it's not scientific to believe. So we may ask them this. But why do you believe in subatomic particles? Have you seen them? Can you prove they exist? And they say, no, but the scientists have proved. So that means they have faith in the scientists. For the common man, even if you show him the so-called proof, or what's demonstrated to be the proof, then he can't understand. Unless you have much training, you can't understand. So he has faith. You have to put your faith somewhere. Some people say, well, I don't believe anything, but you have to believe something. If you believe that the food you eat will nourish you, then you eat it. If you don't, you may starve. So basic faith. Everyone, when you're walking on the road, you have faith. You don't think about it, you don't make a philosophical presentation about it, but you have faith that the earth will support me. If you don't have faith, you can't put one step forward. So at some point you have to place your faith. So it's only a matter of where to place it reasonably. There's reasonable faith and unreasonable. Now, a lot of problems have arisen. People have rejected the religious process because this point of faith is misunderstood. Faith doesn't mean that it's independent of philosophy. It's not that, just like you'll find many Christians, they say you just have to believe the Bible. Just believe. But with no critical analysis. Just believe. Well, my question when I was a child was, why should I believe the Bible? Why not something else? Why not the Quran? Why not the Bhagavad Gita? If you say you have to believe, why only the Bible? Just because you say you have to believe the Bible. Why? Other people say you should believe the Quran. Other people say you should believe the Bhagavad Gita. Some people say you shouldn't believe any of these things. So why? Some critical analysis is also required. We see in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he speaks to Arjuna about faith. But that's not all. He explains why you should have faith. He doesn't just say, just believe. Of course, if you do just believe without any philosophical understanding, that is also good. Just like you see some simple people, they just tend to follow and have faith. And if they get a good leader, then they're fortunate. But that's the point. Often they don't get a good leader, and they tend to believe anyone because the point of understanding philosophically hasn't been stressed. Previously in India it was very much stressed. That the whole religious culture of India rested on philosophy, not on blind faith as it is nowadays. They would have debates, and then if you lost the debate, you had to become the disciple of the other person. Debate, and there were rules. It's not just nowadays. You see, you discuss philosophy with people, and then they do this. After you defeat all their points, they say, "Well, I don't know. I just don't believe what you're saying. And why did you bother discussing?" And they're so because they don't follow any rules of discussion, then they can't accept any simple point. Otherwise, people are stupid. Just to put it briefly. They can't understand that when you're arguing with them, that they can't even understand that they're wrong when you've shown they're wrong. So there's a science of debate also, and that's according to the rules of the Nyaya Shastra. But that was very much part of the previous culture. You see that the great acharyas used to go here and there and debate and convert people. And there's all the Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, Ramanuja, they would go here and there and debate. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would debate also, but mostly with the learned people. The common people he'd chant Hare Krishna. He'd conquer their hearts by Sankirtan. But then after debating with persons like Keshav Kashmiri, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, the Buddhist Acharya that's described when he was in Sarvabhaum. Then after debating, they'd engage in Sankirtan. And for the common people, they'd just engage in Sankirtan without so much debate. But it was all based on that. Now you see that Ramanujacharya, when he was exiled in Melkote, then when he first went there as a Jain kingdom, you know that site in Karnataka, there's still so many big Jain statues outside, and famous. So he debated, and there were so many Jains there. And the condition was whoever loses in the argument, they should either submit or die. That's all. The only two choices. So most of the Jains, some of them, they submitted to Ramanuja when he defeated them. And those who didn't, they were made into churna, they were made into powder. They were pounded to death by the ones who were converted. So it was a serious thing. And it was based on philosophy, it wasn't based on simply sentiment. Nowadays we see people, mostly the religious leaders, they don't even talk any philosophy. They don't even. And you'll find even people as sadhus, and they don't even know, so they're dressed as sadhus, but they don't know any philosophy. It's all sentiment. So people, they can't distinguish between what is actual religion, what is not. That is a symptom of the mode of ignorance. Tamaguna, one cannot distinguish between dharma and adharma. And thus he takes dharma to be adharma and adharma to be dharma. And thus we see modern Hinduism, it's just full of so much confusion. Because people don't know any shastra. And they just mistake mundane welfare work or some sentiment as being religious. And if someone smiles and they're nice, and they can become a religious leader on that basis. But actually they have no proper basis in philosophical understanding. That's why you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave respect to Keshav Kashmiri, all these. Keshav Kashmiri, he was actually a Vaishnava, but he was more interested in debating and showing his skill as a scholar. Whereas Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati, they were committed impersonalists, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could debate with them on the basis of the Vedic literature. They accepted the Vedic literature as bona fide, but nowadays you see even people, they take the Vedas, they quote this way, they misquote that way. So Prabhupada, he was always speaking philosophy to his disciples, training them to have faith in the Vedic literatures and to understand them properly as they are, and to distinguish what is proper from what is not improper. This power of discrimination, without which a human being is simply, he's not a human actually. Dharmena hina pashubhyena rana. Dharmo hitesha matiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhyena rana. Human beings and the animals, what is the difference? The human beings have the opportunity to understand what is dharma. So without that, one is simply an animal. So dharma is all based on discrimination between what is proper and what is not proper. And that discrimination is to be exercised according to the edicts of the Vedic literatures. Otherwise, you see, even in modern society, even in the West, where the people are practically amoral, totally, they have no basis in Shastra, but they still, they're debating, is it right or is it wrong to have abortions, for instance? So they still have some idea that there's some right and wrong. But they don't have any basis to understand what is that, what is right and what is wrong. They don't have any fixed basis, just on their imagination, what they think is best for human society, humanitarianism. So therefore they naturally make so many mistakes in understanding what is right and what is wrong. Because pravritti-jnana-vidurasura, that is the symptom of the demons. We see the modern demoniac society exactly fits this description, that they don't know what is proper and they don't know what is improper. That is defined according to the Vedic literatures. So Prabhupada was introducing this culture of proper philosophical understanding, which it's absent in the modern world. Who is discussing philosophy? Or even if they do, just so you'll find there's a few Shankarite pundits or Madhva pundits, and they go very deeply into philosophy and they discuss with each other. And after they discuss, they just kind of, they go on with whatever they're doing anyway. And it doesn't make any difference to the world in general, because it's so abstruse and abstract, their philosophical discussions, and it's way over the heads of most people. And doesn't relate to the practical life of people whatsoever. So Prabhupada was very expert in introducing this Vedic philosophy, but in a manner that people can relate to and understand, that, that influences people's lives. And there's no use in discussing all this philosophy unless it can relate to people's lives, because this philosophy is just, it's part of dharma, which is, dharma is not simply something to be talked about, but it's practical, it applies to our lives. So Prabhupada very practically taught people how to apply this in their lives, and on what basis it should be applied according to the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, especially the basis is Bhagavad Gita. So this is all very practical. People nowadays, they're not there. Who's discussing philosophy? Simply, you see, the most intelligent people, what are they doing? They're making bombs, or they're doing politics, or they're making jokes. Someone like Kushwant Singh is famous. He's a, you know, he has a good brain, no doubt, but he's just, he's famous for making jokes. Jokes, and then, you know, his sarcastic, atheistic comments. He thinks he's very intelligent. He must be old now, huh? He must be very old. Who knows where he's going? He's a complete atheist. Very influential in the last, what, 40 years or something. He's been one of the top, he's the most famous journalist in India. But he's very atheistic and very, he's always making these jokes about religion, these sarcastic jokes. So he's intelligent, but that's called durbuddhi, bad intelligence, by which he's misled so many people. They make not just sarcastic jokes, but profane. Do you know what profane means? It means like sacrilegious, it means offensive to that which is sacred. So he's trained so many people like that. So they're misusing their intelligence. And then I think that maybe the number two famous journalist in India is Shobha Dev. Is it? What do you think? You don't read much. He thinks. She's another, I mean, she's a complete profligate woman. She's promoting illicit sex and all these things. These are the things. How they're misusing their intelligence. And it seems to people who are not trained in philosophy, it seems to be right. You see how they're making jokes about this, what's the use of all this religion and all this. It seems to people, because they're intelligent, they're observing in a certain way, but they're out of sync with actual reality. It appears to be reality to them that we should, now why all this religion, just enjoy life? Is it both of them, Kushwan Singh, Shobhadev, they're both promoting illicit sex. They're ultimately, their whole thing is just enjoy life, drink, have money, and then also be good along with that, which I think it's difficult to understand, but it's like, you know. Anyway, so they're promoting these things, and to people who have a materialistic worldview, it seems to be correct, but then they don't think that actually you have to die and you have to suffer for the reactions of your activities. And your big famous atheists, they'll simply laugh at such things. But actually, it's a fact. You have to die. They're just avoiding it. Well, it's natural, and you know, there's nothing after death. They assert. They say, there is nothing after death. And they say it like this, as if they're a great authority. And it's simply by their saying so, there's nothing after death. And they're talking, we have to be scientific. And say, nothing after death. And what's scientific? What do you know? What's your scientific? There's no scientific proof. There's nothing after death. There's plenty of circumstantial evidence to suggest that there is something after death. Just like you accept the existence of subatomic particles, no one ever saw such things. It's only accepted by circumstantial evidence. But you accept it. There's plenty of circumstantial evidence of reincarnation. So many cases, hundreds and thousands of cases documented all over the world of young children who they intimately know the details of some existence, which is, you know, another place, another time.
It's impossible they could know except if they were previously in that existence. So much. And they don't like to accept because they're atheists. I saw something recently that said that no one is an atheist because of philosophy.
Hume, then Russell, their arguments
for atheism are mostly based on how bogus the Christian religion and how bogus the both in theory and practice.
Facetiously saying, I could believe in a God who would dance, because the Christian concept of God is some old man sitting, judging people, punishing them. He doesn't know God is dancing. He's always dancing. Whether he'd accept him or not in that circumstance, that's debatable. But his whole point, he was pointing out the absurdity in the Christian concept of God, presuming that that must be the definition of God. So in some way, although we can say in some ways that Christianity has, on the whole, it's been a good influence in the world. On the whole, we can say that. Despite its, they've twisted the teachings of Christ so badly that they made Christ out to be a drunkard and a meat eater, which he's not. He's a sadhu. So despite their perversion, their perverted, still something good is there. But on the other hand, it's for people who go more deeply, it's actually done damage in the sense that people of intellectual, inquiring nature, they can understand it's so bogus. Not that Christ, what he taught was bogus, but what the Christians teach, there's a difference. Some people call Christianity churchianity. It's not exactly what Christ said. It's what the church said, what's convenient for them. So we shouldn't make the same mistake that now we're presenting Krishna consciousness. And you see, that what happened in the church was that they changed so many things because it was politically favorable for them at the time. They're just like, if you want to stop meat eating, well, they made a compromise. Okay, the church leaders, they compromised with the Roman emperor, who said that because he could see Christianity was spreading so much, he couldn't control it. So he made a compromise that, okay, we'll accept Christianity as the state religion. And then all the whole of Europe was under Rome, so it will all become Christian. But I just have some condition. One condition is that you edit out these things about reincarnation. Another condition is you edit out the things about meat eating and drinking. You just change the Bible. Just make a little change and we'll accept it, and then we won't throw you to the lions anymore. And the whole of Europe will be Christian. So they said, okay. And that was the beginning of the Christianity being widespread, and it was the end of Christianity. Simultaneously, both things. It spread very widely and it was finished, because it was not actually what Christ taught. So we may make the same mistake. We may think that, well, you know, if we don't preach all these things, you know, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, then people will accept it more easily, and then they'll spread more widely. Maybe. Maybe and maybe not, because there are already so many bogus people out there saying, do whatever you like and then just believe in me. There's a God competition. All the different gods are saying, just believe in me, I'm God. No, believe in me, I'm God. See, I can make apples appear. I'm God. No, I can do other things. I have some other tricks. So, it's not very likely that Krishna consciousness will spread more, because if we just change the principle, because there are already so many cheaters out there. So if we join their ranks, then they've got a head start ahead of us anyway. And what have we got to offer special if we offer something cheating? They're already expert. They have years of practice. They have big followings. So, and anyway, even if you did get many followers, what's the use? Just like once someone told Prabhupada, you see in your movement there are actually not so many people following. Other movements, there are so many people. So Prabhupada told the story that once a rabbit said to a tiger, that you see, you only have one child a year and I'm having 6 or 7 every 3 months. So the tigress said to the rabbitess, Mrs. Rabbit, that yes, you have so many children, but they're all rabbits, and I only have one child here, and it's a tiger. So you go on having children, and my children will eat your children, and I'm eating you. That last bit I added on. Prabhupada didn't say that, but you get the point anyway. You get the point that quality is one thing and quantity is something else. Quantity we want, but not at the expense of quality. Ekas chandra, eko chandras tamohanti, kimna tara bahunicha. One moon is more valuable than many millions of stars. So we shouldn't compromise. We should stick to our principles and let people come who want to be Krishna conscious. And those who don't, well, there are plenty of other things for them to do. They can crawl on the ground, swim in the water, fly in the air. At least 84 lakhs varieties of things for them to do. So there's no shortage of things for them to do. Let them do. We don't want, we shall preach, don't get reborn, come to Krishna. But if they don't, what can they do? That's the duty of the devotee, is to preach. And if others don't follow, then at least we've done our duty. So, Hare Krishna. It's a short class today. We'll start again at 10 o'clock. Speaking about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And, 10 to 12 we'll have like that bhajan and speaking. And then 12 o'clock, Pushpanjali, followed by Guru Puja. So we need plenty of pushpa, pushpu, I think you say in Croatian, it's your Sanskritized Croatian.
No, Sviječan.
No, but I hear the devotees in Croatia, they say pushpa, pushpu or something, maybe it's according to the grammar it changes. You didn't hear? I have. It changes according to the grammar.
Pushpa,
I thought I had pushpa.
Pa to je slang, ono to nije indijskom slang.
Ja, ja. No, it's not iskon slang, it's Sanskrit. Iskon slang is spaced out, fried out, that's hippie slang. Kept alive by iskon. But pushpa is Sanskrit, just like we say paramatma. It's not slang. When we speak among each other, we'll use so many words, tamagun, we'll use it in whichever language we so that, like that, it's not slang. A reply from the reader about this idea that you say govinda. You're saying that the vowel becomes long before a double consonant. It's not like that. He's saying that in chanting, in different meters, then the syllable before a double consonant is low. And so, I don't know exactly what I'm saying. Govinda Shri Chandai. I don't know exactly what it means. I don't have any knowledge of this. But it's not long. I thought it couldn't be. How could it be? Because you see, people say, they say Govinda, not Govinda. So that's a misunderstanding. And if it's in that Hari Vaino book, then either you misunderstood what he wrote or he himself is wrong. So you could say, keep on saying Govinda. Not Govinda. Only in Italy they say Govinda. What you doing? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.